Hey, we are talking books. We do it about this time every week for the book club. And when we do talk books, we talk to Andrew Popel, who is the master of the written word here at 2SER, thanks to his show, Final Draft. Good morning.
Hey, morning, Nick. I love the idea that I just run around the 2SER studios with a whip.
That's what you do. That's what
written
you do.
Corralling written words.
I've seen you slap books out of people's hands. Not that one. Okay, that was a lie, and who has never done that at all, ever. Okay, let's talk about the actual book we're discussing.
Oh, man, there are so many books, actually. There is quite a pile furnishing my house at the moment. I'm excited. I'm going to be bringing so many of them to you in the near future. But one in particular has snuck up on me recently, and I decided to bring it in today. It kind of jumped the choice that I did have for today. The Everlasting Sunday is the debut novel from Melbourne author Robert Lucan. And it caught my attention because it is this deeply moving and thoughtful work. So The Everlasting Sunday describes the arrival of 17-year-old Radford at Goodwin Manor. It is the English winter of 1962, a cold snap so severe that it will come to be known as the Big Freeze, and snow blankets the country. So this is historically accurate, and there is actually there are news stories out there at the moment comparing the current the current cold snap in England to the winter of 62. It was the coldest for 100 years and one of the coldest on record. So Radford is immediately suspicious of his new home and his companions, and so he vows to remain aloof. See, Goodwin Manor is a home for boys found by trouble, and there's a saying that it only takes two things to get there: a reason and a final straw. Under the tutelage of Teddy, and befriended by the charismatic West, however, Radford soon settles into his new home. If not for comfort, then perhaps survival. The group maintains strange rituals of banishment to the chicken coop, and wakes held in the far-off cemetery for long-dead names on headstones.
Wow.
But they accept him as their own. As the cold lengthens, however, and days cut off from the world stir boredom in the house, the mood soon shifts. A Dr. Cass has arrived to inspect the unconventional arrangements, and everyone's on edge. So at just over 200 pages, this is a wonderfully evocative and atmospheric book. As I mentioned in my intro to it, the book takes place across the Big Freeze of 1962-63. The UK was buffeted by the coldest conditions in about 100 years, some of the worst on record, and the sense of the cold and the way it can kind of blot out the world pervades the book. The cold really operates well. And I have to say, Robert Lucan does really well writing this. Not just the sense that, hey, it's kind of cold and white out there, but that it is closed. It's close in. As we meet Radford, he's being driven by his uncle to Goodwin Manor, soon to be left at the gate with no explanation. So my first impression of this was kind of a boy's own style adventure mystery, as we're introduced to this dilapidated country estate full of ne'er-do-wells and an enigmatic overseer. Lucan quickly disabuses us of that notion, whilst also allowing the associations that develop to linger. Now, this is probably going to be a particular thing if you haven't read that kind of mid-century or earlier British story where there's children. Think the Railway Children. Yeah. Think Secret Garden-y type stuff. You just imagine we're off to the country and there's adventures afoot.
It's such a vital association for me growing up reading those.
No prizes for guessing that we're white Anglo-Saxons. But look, The Everlasting Sunday, it just does this amazing thing. In the isolation of the cold and the estate, which is far from town, the interior lives of the boys come to the fore. That their pasts are never spoken of only encourages the reader, or encouraged me, to speculate as well as explore the impact of this unknown past on the current situation. So issues of mental health are explored with a deft hand throughout. It's fascinating to watch it unfold because, of course, we're dealing with the time, the 60s, when mental health issues, and particularly men's mental health issues, were taboo topics.
Oh, yeah.
On reflection, the creation of the manor and its refuge for young men provides the perfect setting for this discussion, and it allows events to unfold at their own pace. I mean, I couldn't imagine this sort of interior world being developed in a more populous area.
Yep, no, that makes sense.
So the action of the novel is in the relationships Radford establishes, particularly with his mentor Teddy and his best friend West. These take the form of a drawing out where Radford's determination to remain an outsider gives a patina of solidarity to the rest of the house. Of course, they're all outsiders and alone in their own way, rejected by the world, and these tensions must inevitably show themselves. This is all I'm all about the hinting here. At 200 pages, I can't say too much. There's one or two things to spoil that kind of really the tension of the novel builds towards. The Everlasting Sunday is a gem of a debut. It hits the right notes of warmth and tension to engage the reader. And I guess, you know, it rewards with these really insightful characterizations. It's definitely for fans of Katsuo Ishiguro and anyone watching the socials with envy at their friends' Portraits of England Covered in Snow right now.
200 pages does not seem like enough to pack in everything you're talking about.
It's really, I guess it has a lot to do with the way the interior world unfolds.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about thoughtful moments to yourself, you can have this, you know, complete sense of peace and space, if you're lucky, where you probably couldn't fill a page with the thoughts that you've had. But then also moments of really tense, you know, 5 minutes of thoughts alone would probably fill several novels. So the interior space is allowed to expand and contract. And I think Robert Lucan does really well with that. And so much happens. This book happens over this very close winter, but he does it so well.
I was going to say, it sounds like Lucan has an extraordinarily adept hand at imagery as well, from what you're describing.
Very much so, very much so. And the motifs, the characterizations, but then also the metaphors that he creates from the countryside, from the weather, and from within the house are really, really something that have to be read. I don't think I could do them justice right now.
Well, I'm going to have to pick it up and read it. Done.
Give it a go.
The Everlasting Sunday.
Yeah.
What is happening on Final Draft these days? What are you doing? What are you doing on your show?
Do you know what, Nick? Last time I was in, because I did have a week off,
yes,
I completely forgot to mention about the Australian Classics Book Club. It's back.
Hooray!
Back for 2018. So friends of books can go to 2scr.com/shows/Final Draft and rediscover Boyd Oxlade's Death in Brunswick.
Yes, yeah. Excellent.
The book, of course, inspired the cult 1990 film starring Sam Neill and John Clarke. But fans can tune in to hear David Winter from Text, author Shane Maloney, who was actually a contemporary and knew Boyd Oxlade. He's also an author. And I discuss why the book is such a treasure.
I cannot wait.
And next week,
yeah,
Michael Muhammad Ahmed's The Lebs. I have loved Michael's work since The Tribe came out a few years ago, and I'm so excited for this. It's not really his debut novel. Of course, I guess The Tribe takes it. It was a bit sort of a novella.
Yeah, we'll call it that.
I'm going to say, for me, Michael Muhammad Ahmed's The Lebs has been hotly anticipated. I'm so excited to be reading it and to be bringing it to you next week.
I look forward to it next week. Andrew Popel, thank you very much.
Thanks, Nick.